war crimes have been committed by members of Myanmar's defense services. They will be prosecuted through our military justice system in accordance with Myanmar's constitution.
Aung San Suu Kyi defends what is widely thought to be war crimes. It's Thursday, December 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Also ahead, a recovery operation at a New Zealand volcano is on hold. We have the full story for you in a moment. The UN Security Council meets on North Korea. The focus of the meeting has been changed. And the World Trade Organization has less to organize today. All on today's VOA Asia. Myanmar's leader and Nobel Peace Laureate Aung San Suu Kyi has defended her government's actions before the International Court of Justice in The Hague against genocide accusations. Speaking at the court Wednesday, she called the case against her country incomplete and misleading. Marta Vanderwolf reports from London.
Aung San Suu Kyi defended Myanmar's leadership against claims that genocide is happening in the country.
Can there be genocidal intent on the part of the state that actively investigates, prosecutes, and punishes soldiers and officers who are accused of wrongdoing?
The hearings of the case against Myanmar at the United Nations highest court started on Tuesday and included detailed accusations of mass killings, torture, and rape against members of the Muslim Rohingya minority. The Gambia brought the case to the court to ask for protection for the Rohingya. More than 700,000 have fled to neighboring Bangladesh since 2017. Aung San Suu Kyi, once seen as one of the world's greatest human rights defenders, argued Wednesday that the internal conflict might at most have led to potential violations of international humanitarian law.
If war crimes have been committed by members of Myanmar's defense services, they will be prosecuted through our military justice system in accordance with Myanmar's constitution. It is a matter for the competent criminal justice authorities to assess whether, for example, there had been inadequate distinction between civilians and RSF fighters, disproportionate use of force, violations of human rights, failure to prevent plundering of property or destruction, or acts of forcible displacement of civilians. Such conduct, if proven, could be relevant under international humanitarian law or human rights conventions.
Alison Smith of the NGO No Peace Without Justice says she is eager to see what the court makes of the defense argument.
The fact that there may have been a conflict does not preclude that there might have been genocide. But also the experiences of the Rohingya that we have been speaking with that were unveiled by the Gambia yesterday through the UN fact-finding mission do not speak to an armed conflict, but instead do speak to that genocide has taken place.
A UN fact-finding mission in 2018 found that Myanmar's army showed genocidal intent in its military operations. Hla Kiau is chairman of the European Rohingya Council and demonstrated in front of the court during Aung San Suu Kyi's statement. He says this case is the beginning towards justice for the Rohingya.
We are expecting justice from international community. International Court of Justice will be taking all of the measures to take the action against genocide against our people. Therefore, in this International Court of Justice, we are hoping for justice for Rohingya people as quick as possible. At the end of the day, truth will come out.
Aung San Suu Kyi heads the Myanmar civilian government. Myanmar's military rulers had her under house arrest for 15 years. In 1991, she won the Nobel Peace Prize. However, after becoming part of the government, she has routinely denied reports of ethnic cleansing and defended the military. A first ruling on the case and whether or not the Rohingya should be protected is expected within weeks. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, London.
Meanwhile, nearly 100 Rohingya appeared in a Myanmar court Wednesday after being arrested for trying to flee persecution, according to their lawyer. They were arrested November 29th after traveling by boat from Rakhine to a southern beach where buses were waiting to take them to the commercial capital of Yangon. Their crime was to leave their hometownships without permission from authorities. Rohingya in Rakhine State live under tight restrictions with little access to health care, education, or livelihoods in conditions Amnesty International brands as apartheid. If convicted, they likely face 2 years in prison for violating the Immigration Act. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. India has passed a contentious citizenship bill that critics have slammed as unconstitutional and discriminatory because it excludes Muslims from a path to nationality that will be granted to religious minorities from three neighboring countries. An anti-terrorism court in Pakistan on Wednesday indicted Hafiz Saeed, the suspected planner of the 2008 attacks on the Indian city of Mumbai, along with his four senior aides on terror financing charges. Bougainville has taken a major step toward becoming the world's newest nation. They voted overwhelmingly for independence from Papua New Guinea. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the voanews.com website. In New Zealand, a recovery operation is on hold as tremors increase around the volcano where a group of tourists died in an eruption on Monday.
There's a 50-50 chance the volcano on New Zealand's White Island could erupt again. It's where a group of tourists lost their lives to steam and hot ash earlier this week. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said getting back there is of paramount importance to recovery teams.
They've been receiving information and advice from GNS, from technical experts, as to the best, most appropriate time for them to be able to return to White Island to undertake that recovery. But having spoken to many of those involved in that operation, they are very, very eager to get back.
But conditions were still dangerous Wednesday, and authorities say they do not want to put any more lives at risk.
We will make decisions based on all of the facts that we have got, and we will not be moving there until the situation is safe for us to operate in.
Emergency crews described Monday's aftermath as overwhelming. Photos show a helicopter with charred rotator blades broken off. 47 people were on the island at the time of the eruption. Dozens are injured and are being treated for burns in specialist units. 14 are known to have died or are missing, with aerial surveillance showing no signs of life on the island.
And it's a really sad, sad time for all of us.
A local Maori community leader says they've performed a traditional ritual to help people retrieve the dead. And at a nearby port, locals bid a sad farewell to the cruise ship that had brought the tourists to the island. Thousands of people visit every year to what is sold as the world's most accessible active marine volcano.
That was Reuters reporter Carolyn Malone. Happening now in Asia, about 20,000 protesters marched through the streets of Sydney, Australia, Wednesday to demand urgent government action on climate change. Protests were organized a day after the historic Australian city was shrouded by a thick cloud of haze stoked by hundreds of devastating bushfires that have burned for weeks on its outskirts. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue now on VOA Asia. The UN Security Council, at the request of the United States, is talking over missile launches by North Korea and the possibility of an escalatory provocation after Pyongyang conducted what it said was a key test at a satellite launch site. Joining us via Skype from UN headquarters in New York is VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. Margaret, is, I understand that this meeting was at first planned to take place earlier in the week and be focused on human rights. Can you talk about what happened?
Sure, Ira. So it was originally going to be a meeting about human rights. That's sort of become an annual exercise within the Security Council in December. Starting in 2014, the council has discussed the human rights situation in North Korea, which is deplorable. They've discussed it each year, and that was originally something the United States pushed. They didn't do it in 2018, in part because there was the Singapore summit in June of that year between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. So I think there was some reticence on the part of the United States to bring up something that irritates North Korea at a time when they were really trying to make diplomatic inroads with them. And but we were anticipating them discussing it this year on Tuesday, which was International Human Rights Day. Council members were saying last week they anticipated it. But the Americans sort of blocked that, and they instead are calling for a meeting about recent developments, as they're putting it, on the peninsula, primarily these 13 different ballistic missile tests they've had over the past 6 months and the one on Saturday that you mentioned.
Well, we know that the Trump administration has been trying every which way they know how, or figure out maybe can work out another meeting with Kim Jong-un, or at least moving somewhat closer to North Korea.
I don't know that another meeting would satisfy the North Koreans right now, because they've become really impatient and frustrated, it seems. They've been putting out statement after statement over the last about 2 weeks or so, saying the end of the year was the deadline for improving relations. But when they say improving relations, they mean easing or lifting sanctions on them. And that's their end goal in this. They're struggling under financial sanctions, and they want them lifted. So if they're going to meet again and there's no sanctions relief on the table, I don't know that Kim Jong-un would even want to do that.
Well, what's been the reaction so far with other UN members, Security Council members?
I expect today, frankly, we're going to hear from other Security Council members on both the ballistic missiles, but also on human rights, because just because this isn't an officially a meeting about human rights doesn't mean it won't come up in their statements. So I expect certainly from, for instance, the European members of the Council, of which there are several, that we will hear something about the abysmal situation of human rights in North Korea. And we'll hear concern about the missile tests. The Europeans, we haven't had meetings for quite some time, a public meeting anyway, on this issue. And when there have been launches on two or three occasions recently, the Europeans as a group have come before the press and read out a statement condemning the missile launches, because they're not in, they violate Security Council resolutions. So they don't like when they see them happen.
What else is the U.S. doing to make its point as to what it wants to talk about and not talk about human rights?
Well, they brought in their main North Korea person today from Washington. Stephen Biegun, who's the special representative for North Korea, has come here from the State Department. He had lunch with the 15 members of the Security Council with the ambassadors. He was briefing them in this private lunch session. And then at the meeting this afternoon, Ambassador Kelly Craft will be presiding, because the United States is the president of the Security Council this month. She'll be presiding over the meeting, but with her will also be the deputy special representative, Alex Wong, who's also coming to New York for this session.
She's Margaret Bashir. She is the United Nations correspondent for the Voice of America. Thanks, Margaret. Coming your way, the U.S. has done some damage to the World Trade Organization. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia: the powerful bomb and gun attack on the largest American military base in Afghanistan early Wednesday killed at least one person and wounded more than 80 others, most of them civilians. Afghan military authorities said a suicide bomber detonated an explosive-packed vehicle in front of the gate of an unused hospital almost adjacent to the Bagram airfield in Parwan province. VOA Asia continues. Since its founding in 1995, the World Trade Organization has faced numerous crises and helped resolve trade disputes between countless nations. But now, with a little help from the Trump administration, it may now be facing its biggest problem ever. 164 member countries currently are part of the WTO. They come together to create a means of creating rules for international trade and settling disputes between countries without the use of damaging tariffs. Over the years, the WTO created a consensus-based system of regulations, arbitration, and a de facto court system that gave countries a venue for settling claims against each other. However, as of Wednesday, the WTO will likely cease to function in any real sense. Its policymaking arm has been crippled for years over internal disagreements, and now its enforcement arm, a 7-judge panel known as the appellate body, is about to wither away. The result of the Trump administration's decision to block the appointment of new judges to replace those whose terms are expiring. At a news conference, WTO Director General Ricardo Acevedo emphasized that the decision does not mean the end of rules-based dispute settlement between nations.
And in this context, I think it's important to emphasize that WTO rules will remain in force, and members, for the most part, will continue to apply the WTO rulebook out of economic self-interest, commitment to legal principle, and, of course, the desire to preserve sound relations with their trading partners.
Now, that might be some wishful thinking. While smaller trade disputes have bubbled up just in the past year, the United States, under the administration of Donald Trump, has been assertively implementing tariffs on a number of nations, first among them China. Despite the size of its economy, the second largest in the world, the WTO allows China to operate under relaxed rules reserved for developing countries, something the Trump administration has criticized as deeply unfair. American anger at the WTO did not originate with the election of Trump. Multiple administrations, including the Obama administration, have tangled with the organization, particularly over some rulings from the appellate body that U.S. officials have said exceeded its mandate. However, the Trump administration has been the most aggressive in trying to rein in the WTO. In addition to blocking the appointment of new judges, the U.S. has cut funding for the appellate body, slashing its budget by 93%. WTO Director General Acevedo says he hopes the current situation doesn't lead to more tariffs and trade wars.
The fact that we have unilateral measures being put in place is conducive to an environment of unpredictability. And to the extent that we have unpredictability, we lose investments. And if we lose investments, we compromise economic growth. If we compromise economic growth, we compromise job creation. So this is a lose-lose scenario for everyone. So we are of a view that negotiations, conversations, and mutually agreed solutions are the way forward, not, restrictive measures.
Right now, China is asking the WTO for the right to impose $2.4 billion in annual penalties on the United States in a case over Chinese subsidies. I thank my colleague Doug Bernard for preparing this report. This news break from VOA Asia, foreign experts recruited to add legitimacy to Hong Kong's police watchdog quit Wednesday, saying the agency lacks any teeth. In a statement announcing their decision to quit, the experts from Britain, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand said the watchdog suffers from a crucial shortfall in its powers, capacity, and investigative capability. This is VOA Asia. The Trump administration got bashing from its own countrymen during the 25th United Nations Climate Conference in Spain. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, a Democratic presidential contender, former Secretary of State John Kerry, and actor Harrison Ford all criticized the administration for abandoning the 2016 Paris Agreement on climate. As VOA's Lada Chahok reports, speakers also commended young people around the world for standing up to protect the planet.
A group of protesters gathered outside the conference venue in Madrid on Tuesday to call on Japan to abandon coal-fired power plants.
Japan is holding back progress. They refuse to put forward more ambition, and they continue to fund coal.
Massive protests took place in Japan's capital and other major cities worldwide ahead of the Madrid conference. Most of the participants were young people.
Let's listen to young people around the world who will inherit what we have wrought. Their future has already been diminished by our past.
Speaking at an event in Madrid, actor Harrison Ford praised young people for their courage and criticized the U.S. government for a lack of it.
In 2017, my country's federal government demonstrated a lack of courage. threatening to pull out of the Paris agreements.
U.S. President Donald Trump has repeatedly denied the science of climate change and has been a staunch supporter of the fossil fuel industry. But many local governments, corporations, and private groups remain committed to supporting clean energy sources, among them Bloomberg Philanthropies.
I do want the world to know that Americans are continuing to work on climate change, even with a climate denier in the White House. And one of the things that's fascinating is we have been closing coal-fired power plants at the same rate during the Trump administration that we did during the Obama administration.
But Obama's Secretary of State John Kerry expressed disappointment at a lack of progress on climate change.
We thought we were on our way. And then, tragically, the new leader of my country decided to tell people in the world, perhaps as a demonstration of his education, that China was responsible for this, that it's a hoax.
Kerry said no country has done its part since the 2016 Paris Agreement, and that the world's worst polluters, including China, India, and the United States, actually increased carbon emissions since then. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Swedish teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg has been named Time magazine's Person of the Year for 2019. She is the youngest person to win the award after quickly evolving into one of the world's most prominent climate change activists. A new rehab technology company is helping patients maximize physical therapy and regain movement after paralysis through gaming. Deanna Mitchell checks it out.
Bernadette Gersh said she'd never been a gamer, but for a year straight, she played every day.
2015, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor called a glioblastoma multiforme grade 4.
Aggressive medication used during a clinical trial paralyzed her left arm and leg. As a nurse, Gersh knew she had to take action quickly in order to get moving again.
Everything was totally limp and flaccid on the left side.
She found NeoFact, a tech company that uses games to retrain the brain through physical therapy. After 6 months of daily play, she regained most of the movement in her arm. NeoFact's CEO, Scott Kim, leaned on his own experience with rehab as a young child, born with spina bifida.
I had a major surgery on my back, and after the surgery, like, I had to go through the rehabilitation process. Getting up, you know, lying down, getting back up, and just repeat this.
Kim said repetition is most important part of physical therapy, but it is also boring, monotonous. To change that, NeoFact developed its flagship product, the Smart Glove. It sits on your hand like a light exoskeleton, filled with sensors to track movement.
It becomes virtual controller. So all the motions that you're making with the glove on are recognized by the software.
Software keeps track of progress and uses artificial intelligence algorithms to encourage patients to try greater challenges as they improve.
Now you can say with the software that, oh, you gained like 3 degrees on pronation and 15 degrees in, you know, supination.
NeoFX's latest product is called the Neo Mono, meaning new hand. Kim says it will actually flex a patient's fingers in cases with no movement at all. Further using tech and video games to help patients through tough recoveries. Dina Mitchell for VOA News, San Francisco, California.
Hundreds of Pakistani lawyers angered over alleged misbehavior by some doctors toward one of their colleagues stormed a cardiology hospital in the eastern city of Lahore Wednesday. The assault set off scuffles with the facility staff and guards that caused 3 deaths and left heart patients unattended for several hours, according to police. According to the police, the lawyers started punching and kicking some doctors at Punjab Institute of Cardiology and beating them with sticks. Police said the mob damaged hospital equipment and prompted the families of some patients to move them to other hospitals. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes, SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Visit our VOAnews.com program page. See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. and we can hear from you. You go to VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kevin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gal, and the VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.